Ring, 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 ring. Hello, this is Chapo Trap House. Will speaking.
It's Mr. Chapo.
Yeah, yes, this is Chapo Trap House. This is Will speaking. How may I help you?
I'm Gorka.
It's Sebastian Gorka calling us back again.
Gorky,
old chap, how you been?
You seem to have caught me in the middle of my mineral bath.
Sir Gorka, we're honored to have you calling again. What brings a knight of the Vitenz Order ringing up the
Mr.
show?
Mr. Chapo, there was some misunderstanding the last time, and I was hoping that if I wasn't able to convince you to pop on down to the White House, as last time, that perhaps this time maybe I could convince you to just scoot on over to the Blair House or something. And reason with me. Just come. Why don't you take a zip line down to the Jefferson Memorial, and we can have a meeting of the minds. I've been accused of so many things. You've accused me of being a fascist.
Sebi, is that what's been on your mind this week?
Yeah, thank you. Yes, Sebi, that's a term of endearment. I've been accused of the most atrocious level of fascism.
Well, yeah, I mean, people are essentially saying that you have deep ties to the far right in Hungary.
Let me ask you something, Mr. Chapo. Do you consider a surface-level series of tattoos to be a deep tie to an organization?
I mean, yeah, pretty much.
I'm not an active member. I only show up for the high ceremonies, of course. There's great news. Events move quickly, you see. Today, after all, we've said farewell to our dear colleague, Mr. Bannon.
Yeah, no, he's out at the NSC. How do you feel about that?
My feelings are private matter, but my public statement is that, well, things shall continue. The grand plan continues. The enemies of the kingdom shall kneel before the sacred tit of a killer. The dragon of Budapest shall rise. I've been accused by not only your listeners, but people who've retweeted you on Twitter, that they've accused me of hating Jews. I promise you, I do not hate Jews. I have never hated Jews. And I believe that Jews can be integrated quite simply into a reorganized society.
I mean, you do work with Jared Kushner.
For now. Bannon has been removed, and the other obstacles to our final victory will be removed too. La, 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 la. You see, an elementary thinker, Mr. Chapo, might play two chess moves or three chess moves ahead. Gorka plays 5 stratego moves ahead. Bannon is gone. I am in the White House.
Do you have anything else you'd like to get on the record or set straight this week?
Do you have any plugs?
Hail victory! Hail Trump! Hail the Vitesse Rand! Mr. Chapo, there will come a time when your loyalty will be tested, and I trust, Mr. Chapo, that you will understand who has been good to you. Bannon is gone!
Flynn is gone, too.
Flynn is gone! I must be going. Hold on, I think I have an appointment here. Let me check my trapper keeper for a moment to see.
Is it a Lisa Frank trapper keeper?
Yeah, what's on the cover of this trapper keeper?
There's some pink flamingos and Corvettes and sunglasses.
I mean, that is Hungarian nationalist imagery.
Yes, if you don't mind, I must be running immediately naked from my bath. I'm due for a game of Axis and Allies with Gorsuch, you see. And of course, Mr. Chapo, I always play Germany. Gorka! Gorka! We'll be right back.
Okay. Okay, this is Chapo, everybody. To provide some context, we're recording this on Friday around noon. It's me, Matt, and Felix, and our guest is Alex Perrine. I feel like this one's been a long time coming. Now, originally our plan was to get Alex on to talk about his great article on Trump and the long, lucrative right-wing con that is now destroying our government and the world that was in Fusion this week, but... oh boy, hostage to the end of history, because we're actually going to begin talking about your other article about how the media is going to get everyone killed by praising Trump for acting presidential every time he gets someone killed. So last night, the U.S. launched about 60 Tomahawk missiles at a Syrian airbase in retaliation for Assad gassing people.
But they should also, introduce
Alex. Yeah, okay. Sorry. Alex Perrine, everybody.
Hi. You'd think we would have this down by now. It's only been about 100 episodes.
This is your
episodes.
Second show, right?
Yeah.
We have single-handedly disproven Malcolm Gladwell's dictum about practice.
That's the 10,000-hour rule.
We have proven dumbass why stupid people are smart. Because we're terrible at this, but very successful.
Yeah. No, like I said, we should begin with, Alex, this now... sadly, very prescient piece you wrote right after Trump's sort of pseudo State of the Union, his joint address to Congress, where everybody, like the morning after, everyone said like the moment of the night is the standing ovation for like the wife of that Navy SEAL that he just got killed in a botched raid in Yemen or whatever. And the consensus was like, wow. Trump is, this is the moment he became president.
Even though the entire week before that, almost, he was like, it was Obama's fault, but also the Joint Chiefs,
yeah,
and also the troops.
Yes.
They let me down.
Yeah. Listen, I wanted to go on the mission myself. I would have taken a bullet for him, but they didn't let me.
So
he was going to send Jared, actually.
American sniper, too, Jared.
So I just want to read briefly from that piece. You write in the beginning, here's what you have to understand about the sort of people who become anchors, nonpartisan pundits, centrist columnists, and cable news political correspondents. They didn't sign up to be the resistance. They don't want Donald Trump to fail. They want him to, quote, pivot and act presidential. But mostly these guys want to be witnesses to great men making history. They want to respect the office of the presidency. So we're basically seeing this play out again after this Tomahawk missile strike on Syria last night.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And it's incredible how quickly just everyone fell into the routine. Like, they were so excited to do it. My colleague Albert Bernico from Deadspin was like, it's like they had the packages ready on cable with like the drum marches and the solemn music, and like the they had the package ready and they were just waiting for the script, you know, and like right away they're just like, all right, like now we get to reenact being so excited about a war ramping up.
We were just talking, like, Brian Williams was like jizzing in his pants last night, quoting Leonard Cohen, yes, to describe what
surreal
cruise missiles taking off from a destroyer looks like, you know? Yeah. Which was, again, he's like, their media is back on their bullshit when it comes to this war shit.
Lord forgive me, I tried, but I'm back on my official Doritos countdown to the occupation of Damascus. First of all, Brian Williams he's the perfect example of this type of sort of fucking dunderhead, because he's so into the idea of war that he lied about being in war, despite the fact that it's very easy to check and got in a lot of trouble for it.
Well, that's what's so funny to me, that he did get in so much trouble for that, because like him lying about getting shot at in a helicopter, like, isn't he just doing his job?
Right. Yeah.
Isn't he just doing his job, basically, which is to like... sell a war and make it seem cool and sexy.
Yeah. I mean, he's a storyteller, I guess, but you can just tell he's the guy has like always wanted to like actually just be on TV by any means necessary. Like, he fell into being a news anchor because he like had the right jawline for it.
Yeah.
But he was like, but you know, I could have also hosted Wheel of Fortune. I'd be fine with that too.
He did. He lobbied to get on SNL.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yes. Those guys, those Brian Williams guys, the Anderson Cooper guys, They're like fucking breeding horses. They have no other talents, but they just come from a long line. Rich people trot the Vanderbilts and fucking Whitneys breed them, and they trot them out, and they go, well, this guy has, you know, the perfect symmetrical
gravitas.
Face.
He's got...
When he lied about the helicopter, he was just drawing on his UCB improv.
I need a place. I'm on a helicopter. I need an action gunfire. Okay. All right. To work with it. Yes, and
but another guy, like, you know, right after the Trump sort of not really State of the Union, you know, Chris Cillizza or whatever was like, wow, that was Trump knew it was a moment and he let it be a moment. And you know, you're right. I mean, like, you're right here, like, here's another thing you should understand about these guys, like the Williamses, the Cillizzas of the world. The only thing the elite Washington press corps likes more than bipartisan commission on debt reduction is a stack of flag-draped coffins. That's why the best reviews of Trump so far in his short, mostly disastrous presidency have come in response to the moment in last night's joint address in which he trotted out the widow of a service member, a SEAL whose death he denied responsibility for just a few hours earlier, to a sustained standing ovation and rapturous press coverage. It's a short piece, but I just want to quote the end here, which is really chilling, actually. If one dead American service member won him this much praise, just imagine how much they'll respect him when he kills a couple thousand. Now that Trump has learned there's a direct relationship between a president's body count and how, quote, presidential the mainstream political press considers him to be, the whole world is fucked.
When did, like, I write that? January?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Jesus. Let the eagle soar. Yeah.
But, like, yeah, you're describing this sort of almost Pavlovian conditioning between this relationship between the press and the president, which has now become exaggerated to an absurd extent in Trump because he is a creation of television.
Yeah.
All he does is watch in television and informs his worldview. So, like, you describe how, like, he's sort of uniquely suited to find out what's popular, what people like, play to that, and then and how to, like, get good media coverage out of that.
Yeah.
Like, to push the buttons that people want in the media to, like, and you quote that we talked about Robert Costa, the reporter, said that people on Trump's team were actually surprised at how good the media coverage of his State of the Union was.
Yeah, the report was, we were actually going to, like, sign a new Muslim ban, and we had a planned tantrum for Trump.
Yeah.
You idiots just lap this shit up.
Right. Like, yeah, so we're going to enjoy the honeymoon now. But it's because the one thing the guy is good at and was good at on the campaign trail was he would notice when people liked a thing, and then he would do the thing over and over again. Like, that's his one skill. He's like, oh, you guys like it when I say lock her up, right? Like, I'm going to say that for 6 months.
Do you remember, like, with the Bible where he just, like, kissed it? He was like, you people love this, right? But, like, now he's doing it with cruise missile attacks on Syria.
Yeah.
You know? And you know, this is the other thing I want to get into, like, about, like, you know, we, like, because this shit just happening so fast now. I don't know. I think the best case scenario for this is that this is a return to, like, Clinton bombing the aspirin factory just to get, like, I really hope it doesn't go any further than this. It's unbelievably frightening to think about his hand on running any of this or starting another war in the Middle East, which is the road we're going down now.
Yeah.
The one thing, though, that has to be addressed, and that, like, this idea that, like, people are using this now to exonerate Hillary Clinton on the same fucking day that she came out and endorsed exactly this policy.
Right.
Like, it can't go unsaid.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's, like, this is a great time to clown on the people who were like, Trump's the peace candidate. Like, that's a great time to do that. But, like, the people who are like, don't you wish we had Hillary now? It's like, this was her stated policy. Like, the reason people are falling in line is that Trump is now, like, he ejected Bannon to some degree, and now he's falling in line with the bipartisan foreign policy consensus, which is that we must do something, like, capital S something. And that something is like... like, fight both sides of the Syrian civil war.
I love the people who are twisting themselves in knots to sort of approve of the strike and not approve of Trump.
Yeah.
And it's like, this is exactly what you wanted, because it is nothing. It is highly dangerous. It's moronic.
Yeah. And there's no strategic way in which, like, even if it's, like, just limited strikes, like, what did that accomplish strategically?
It didn't even.
And if it escalates, like, what is the end game?
It didn't even affect the SAA's ability to conduct strikes.
Yeah. But the thing is that they want they want the policy. They want that show of strength. They want America to be relevant, which means bombing people. But they want to maintain that facade of responsibility and deliberation. The idea that the people making these decisions to do idiotic, counterproductive, pointless, bloody military adventures are smart and thoughtful and qualified and are serious moral thinkers. And that's like, that's how they want to imagine their American agenda being expressed. Instead, and this is why when it was running up to it, the day of, I was thinking, and people were like, oh man, is he going to strike Syria? I kind of thought, you know what? If we're going to do this, if we're going to basically reveal that this system we have, this military hegemony, this like global police force for capital is going to do what it's going to do regardless of who's in power, regardless of whether it's a good idea, regardless of everything, because that's all it can do is show force, then strip away all the bullshit. Have those orders be given by a fucking senile game show host dipshit who's like making the decision in his fucking country club while digging into a gristly London broil with three retired dentists from Boca Raton. Like, make it real. Like, you know, get rid of that. But what happened? Like, and then when it finally happened, I'm like, okay, maybe these people realize, oh, the system that I put faith in is basically autonomous, and all of these people's whose personalities I invest so much into is totally arbitrary. They decided, oh, we'll reverse engineer this dipshit into a fucking statesman.
Yeah.
And he became president that night, as Fareed Zakaria said, quoting someone else, presumably.
It is the greatest indictment of liberal interventionism I've ever seen in my life. In 1,000 years of writing articles or fucking harassing Nicholas Kristof online, I could never achieve the indictment of this ideology more than a fucking guy with holes in his brain sitting next to Cadillac dealers who don't get invited to Thanksgiving anymore because they said the N-word too many times, doing exactly what Madeleine Albright or Hillary Clinton or George H.W. Bush, any number of these liberal hawks would do with exactly the same result. It turns out you don't even need a fancy Princeton degree and to write a fucking thesis essay that's like, you know, Rwanda, the unanswered question.
Yeah, I don't even think he's read Samantha Power.
Yeah, somehow.
But like, I mean, this is what it gets to, is like the really frightening thing about this, and Alex, you alluded to it, is that like now Trump is fully part of like the bipartisan consensus on war and peace and national security, which is pro-intervention, that wants that red line about chemical weapons to be enforced. Is like, look, there are plenty of things that like would have been different in like a Trump and Hillary Clinton administration, like the Muslim ban, for instance, or any of the ghouls he's going to fill every federal court with. However, on this specific issue, it really wouldn't have mattered who was president. Mm. Like, and that's what's frightening. And just a week ago, it seemed like Trump and Tillerson said last week that Assad is not our priority. And it seemed to be like basically washing his hands of it. And now, like less than a week later, we've seemed to have completely reversed on that.
Yeah. And it's the wildest thing is that like, whether it's bullshit or not, and there's probably bullshit to it, but like people are like falling over themselves to praise Trump for the fact that he took a complete policy about face on a huge, huge foreign policy issue because he saw pictures that made him sad. Like people are like, oh my God, his heart grew three sizes because because he saw pictures of children who were attacked.
He doesn't want those children in the country, of course.
No, right. Also, his stated policy is that these are future terrorists who we have to be protected from.
They're the poison Skittles.
I want to quote here. This is like in the New York Times, like the news analysis on the front page of the paper today. The headline is, acting on instinct, Trump upends his own foreign policy.
And they're like, good.
And he's like, and it said leading with his heart. And I want to quote here, you know,
if he led with his heart, he would have groped Osma al-Assad. folks, we set up a safe zone for me to assault Syrian women.
But what he said, appearing again the next evening at his Florida estate, Mar-a-Lago, Mr. Trump said that Bashar al-Assad of Syria, quote, choked out the life of innocent women, men, women, and children. It was a slow and brutal death for so many. Even beautiful babies were cruelly murdered.
Even perfect hens.
In this very barbaric attack, no child of God should ever suffer such horror.
Unless I killed 10 times as many people 2 weeks ago, doing the exact same thing.
And yeah, like, you know, Felix is alluding that, like, yeah, we smoked like 10 times that number in Mosul just last week. And it's like, it's impossible to, like, try to tease out any moral or even intellectual consistency with any of this.
He poo-pooed gas attacks. Yeah. During the campaign.
Yes.
About Saddam Hussein said, oh, he threw some gas around. Everybody goes crazy. And that really makes you think, does the only thing that is real to him what is on a screen in front of him?
It is, yeah, completely, yes.
Like people are either an abstraction or in person just like clay to be assaulted or exploited. But if they're on TV, if they're framed as in the narrative fashion of television or film, they are imbued with a soul.
That's the only reason he hasn't become a Salafist is because they can't depict images. If they could.
Okay, so like it's impossible to tease out like any consistency in this, nor should I think anyone try, but like Alex, my question is like this New York Times article, like that he did this massive about face on policy because he was so disturbed by this gas attack and now he's leading with his heart. Isn't the most frightening possibility of this that that's actually true?
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah. Like
that he is just bowed by sort of these whimsical, like maudlin emotions that is transmitted to him via television.
Yeah. And this is what is crazy about the Times framing this is like as good is that they're like the president just completely changes his mind based on what he sees on TV, and like in this case we think that he, yeah, good. Like, but like, yeah, why are we, I don't understand how well, it's a feedback loop too, because the guy reads the Times and he's gonna see this and he's gonna be like, all right, they like this again. It's exactly the
failing New York Times.
Yeah, the failing New York Times. Yeah. But yeah, everyone is really thrilled now that they won him over to the cause of humanitarian intervention, because I mean, like, you know, if he had fucking seen a Sarah McLachlan like animals like these animals need your help, like there would be tomahawk missiles like aimed at
Michael Vick's
house. Yeah, exactly.
I mean fuck that, if he saw Freaks and Geeks, he would have been like, there's horrible stuff going on in American high schools. Yeah. Perfectly nice children, all they do is they're a little awkward, are pushed into lockers and made to feel ashamed. We are sending the 75th Ranger Battalion to every high school
to make
these girls go on dates with nerds.
Well, to this end, like, okay, did you guys see the picture of him on Air Force One on the way to Mar-a-Lago addressing the press about Syria with Star Wars Rogue One playing in the background? And it's the Darth Vader scene, and he's like peeking in to like the press with Darth Vader behind him. And like, to me, like, this is the Adam Curtis hyper-normalization. Yes. Moment that like, it's just like there's no difference anymore between like fantasy and reality. We're all living in this weird entertainment zone where like movies and fiction have just become reality. But like, okay, now this gets into the original piece that we wanted to talk to you about, the one that you wrote this week. This was in Infusion, and the title of which was "The Long Lucrative Right-Wing Grift is Blowing Up in the World's Face." And in that, you introduce it like talking about like precisely this issue about how Trump is informed by, is a creature of television and is informed by television. And I just want to read from the beginning of the article. You write, "If you want to understand intra-GOP warfare, the decision-making process of our president, the implosion of the Republican healthcare plan, and the rest of the politics of the Trump era, you don't need to know about Russian espionage tactics, the state of the white working class, or even the beliefs of the, quote, alt-right. You pretty much just need to be in semi-regular contact with a white, reasonably comfortable male retiree. We are now ruled by men who think and act very much like that ordinary man you might know. And if you want to know why they believe so many strange and terrible things, you can basically blame the fact that a large and lucrative industry is dedicated to lying to them." Could you talk a little about like that idea of Trump as this kind of retiree and the entire media ecosystem that exists to sort of inform, reproduce, and intensify the prejudices and beliefs of this group?
Yeah, people trying to like sort of get at what does he really believe? What is it? What are his actual beliefs? I mean, as we can see, they're changeable. There's no fixed belief system that he has. And it really is, especially now that he's became the presidency, sort of isolated him and made him like pissed off that everyone was not immediately loving him. And he retreats to his room and he watches Fox News all day, which like there are probably a million older men around the country right now whose families hate them and who spend all day watching Fox News and getting madder and madder. And like you probably know some of those men, and it's a machine designed to take the sort of extant like dissatisfaction with modernity that like cantankerous older men feel and just like heighten and radicalize it. And it was done partly with a political purpose, but it was also mostly just done to make a lot of people money. And it's the entire ecosystem was started years and years and years ago, not just by ideologues, but by people who had fucking like multi-level marketing scams. Like, yeah. And Rick Perlstein, who I cite in the piece, like wrote about this in The Baffler years ago. Like the origins of the right-wing media, like are with these people who wanted to build newsletters and sell them.
Direct mail.
It's direct mail. Yeah.
And like that guy, Richard Vigory or whatever.
Yeah,
like
exactly.
Pioneered this direct mail, like mailing list model for selling both hard right-wing politics, but also literal snake oil.
Now it's Magnum PI selling reverse mortgages.
Exactly. Yeah.
Think of all the guys who made their fortunes in direct mail. It's Ron Paul, Lou Rockwell, fucking Colonel Bo Gritz.
You're right here. The bottom feeding amorality of the sorts of people who sponsored the right wing press and crummy nature of the products and services sold shows exactly who is supposed to be consuming it. Suckers. But you also describe how, like, now this has taken on a life of its own, and now the suckers are basically the Freedom Caucus in Congress.
Yeah.
These are people who believe in it. And, like, it's no longer this two-tier thing where you write about, like, there's sort of the shit that's, you know, peddled to rubes, and then there's, like, you know, the sensible people read the Wall Street Journal editorial page and the Weekly Standard. The weird thing is, though, like, are those sources, like, any more or less reality-based? Like, what's the difference?
I think, well, they're not reality-based, but the difference is that they, I've largely the lies they peddle are sort of mostly fantasies that they believe themselves, and like the lies that were peddled to the rubes were just like they didn't care what garbage they were sort of sending them.
Sort of like they're reinforcing their ideology, which they believe, but like the tactical stuff.
Right. And like if you read during the Bush years, if you read the Weekly Standard, like you would have a lot of insane ideas about like what the Bush tax cuts would do, and you would think the Iraq war would be a cakewalk, but you also would like basically understand how political reality worked in Washington. Like you would have had like insight into what the administration was thinking and like what Congress was thinking. You would have understood like what the sort of facts on the ground in Washington were, even if you were being sold all these like crazy fantasies about the effects of conservative policy. But like meanwhile, if you were reading Free Republic, then you know you would think like the Dixie Chicks were like literally like trying to overthrow the country or something like that.
We talk a lot about sort of liberal InfoWars, Russia, Trump compromise stuff, but I think InfoWars sort of does a disservice to our friends in the Weekly Standard and all these places, because do you remember those rash of articles in 2003, 2004 that were like, you know, Saddam's connection to 9/11?
Yeah.
And they were in all these respectable publications. Yeah. Jeffrey Goldberg
got like the Atlantic like bought him off the New Yorker for like twice as much money as he was making because they loved his work so much after he was like, yeah, Saddam did 9/11. Like,
Saddam did 9/11. Hezbollah owns every left government in Latin America.
Yeah.
Just insanity.
And again, all these same people who, you know, like our friend Alex Lowenoshin had a great point on this the other day. He's like, all the people who wrote mea culpas on the Iraq war in about circa 2009 and to be like, I've learned my lesson, are going to absolutely sell you another war in Syria right now.
They can't wait.
They can't fucking wait. They're doing it right now, basically.
Yeah. And Trump is a guy who, as I said, like he started off just sort of because he spent his career selling shit to suckers too. And like that's what he did. He like
the stakes, the ties, the fucking casino. Like,
so he looks at the right wing media and he's like, I could do that. Like I can that's an audience of suckers that I can easily tap into. But you know, like the guy is also really not that smart and like getting up there in years. And like suddenly he immerses himself in this world. And now he literally is a guy who watches Fox News all day. And he like just became subsumed by it. And if you like, that's the like who he is now.
Well, like, I feel like that. And the reason that that's happened under the nose of all of these establishment Republican figures is I think they sort of assumed, and I did until relatively recently too, is that they were sort of protected from blowback from that by the presumption that most Americans thought politics was a profession.
Yeah.
Like there were people who were experts in these things, and you sort of had to be in that track to be considered a credible leader in these things. So that would sort of filter out the people who are watching this from actually getting power. But it turns out when you do not respond to people's desires or needs as a government for 30 to 40 years, people start just get disenchanted with the idea that their leaders have to have a certain pedigree and are just like, well, I basically at this point I'm getting nothing out of politics except for spectacle and catharsis. Why wouldn't I want to vote for the person who's going to give me the best spectacle and catharsis?
It's interesting that Matt said blowback, because this group of people, the sort of upper management of the Republican Party until now, kind of, they remind me of another group of comically, medically fucked up and inbred rich old men, the Souds. They both, since the 70s, cultivated this, were already very hard reactionaries, but they cultivated this sort of base of hardline blood and soil insanity. Yeah. And you
this
know,
apocalyptic, this they sponsor this apocalyptic sort of worldview to be fed to other people.
Yeah, but yeah, and they thought that they were filled, they could filter out these people from touching their power, but they could also harness them to achieve their goals.
Yep.
And it turns out if you just whip people into a frenzy long enough, it'll be like carrying your groceries 7 blocks and then opening your kombucha, except when you open your kombucha, that's Donald Trump's brain. That's him having rabies.
Another thing you touch on in this piece is like how Trump's own consumption of media has changed. And I think you make a really good point that like, look, for most of his life, he was like basically like a New York City Democrat.
Yeah.
And you know, like, and he was able to, as you say, able to pass as an intelligent and well-informed man because he read newspapers every day. Mm-hmm. Like, and if you read the New York Times every day, you said that was a decent enough way to sound like a smart person, at least for a few minutes, which is long enough to impress most rich people, which I think is a really good line. Like, exactly. Like, if you consume the New York Times every day, which is still like the standard of like, yeah, like the paper of record in, right, America, and you sort of consume that and you like have a surface understanding, you can repeat the things that you read in it, like, you know, Thomas Friedman or whatever, yeah, you can sound like an intelligent person to other
Indonesia's at a crossroads.
But he's now morphed, you're right, he goes on, like, he's now morphed and like he's now evolved, he's evolving, yeah, at a rapid rate. But you say Donald Trump today is a cruel dolt turned into a raving madman by cable news and Breitbart.com, much in the way like maybe your grandfather or uncle has over the past 8 or 9 years. You could see the descent happening during the Obama era in concert with the broader maddening of the GOP. However, this is interesting, the major difference between Trump and the other old white men who have been radicalized by the conservative press is that his was strangely self-directed conversion based on his desire to make himself a plausible Republican presidential candidate.
Yeah.
Yeah, like he literally like stared into the abyss and it stared back at him.
Yeah, exactly. And like this is, so yeah, you look at his history and like, so when Donald Trump would, which was like, he would go around saying, I oppose the Iraq war. And it was like, because he like, you know, he read the New York Times. He's like, the Iraq war is not going so well.
Yeah, yeah.
And he was like, and he would go on TV and be like, well, you know, the Iraq war, it's not going so well. And he could, and that was his reasoning for it. But now it's like, now if his source of information is Fox and Friends, like he's going to be, well, the Syrian war is going great.
Yeah. I mean, well, what's so fucked up is that it's not just that he, you know, self-deluded himself. Trump is like the big ball of shit in Katamari Dynasty, because
even though he ran on this drain the swamp, get these fucking globalist interventionist cucks out of here, just by being in D.C. for a few months, he's like, oh, yeah, I also believe that now. Like, you just put him around anything and he'll start believing just enough of it to act on it, because he's an impulsive, insecure dumbass. And if he hears someone older or smarter than him and they don't, you know, attack his TV deals or something, he wants to be liked so bad.
Well, you look at he like he what did he do all the entire campaign is he talked about the generals. The generals want to do this. Here's what the generals tell me. So now you like, all right, the generals are telling him what to do. And he's like, yeah, all right. Like the generals are being like, Mr. President, we respect you so much. And here's our war plan.
Do you remember the best photo of a president ever taken, when he landed on that aircraft carrier and they gave him a windbreaker?
He was so happy looking.
Yeah. He looked like...
It was like his birthday, and the captain was letting him steer the boat for a little
bit.
Yeah,
yeah.
When I saw...
The flight attendant gave him a little wings. Yeah. You know, they were like, you want to see the cockpit?
Dude, when I saw that, I was like... They're one lollipop away from just being able to sell them anywhere.
Oh my God, yeah.
And then it happened. So,
and good news, because of the structure of America's political and military structure, we're going to basically only be getting one thing fed to him, which is being president is bombing people, is seriousness, is the right thing.
Yeah. And like, so, you know, despite what I say about him only consuming Fox News, he's only consuming Fox News right now because he went a little crazy and because they were the only ones being nice to him. Like, he also still cares what CNN
says. Oh, he totally does.
Him.
Like, he
cares what the New York
Times
says.
He would say, don't watch
him.
That CNN. But then, like, literally 2 minutes later, he'd tweet, somebody lies on CNN right now. It's like, well, how the hell are you knowing that if you're not watching it? So
he's
watches
he's
it.
One
and
man
he,
media matters. And he's like, I'll monitor it for you.
He cares.
And the more nice they're to him, the more he's going to watch it. And the more they tell him that he's doing a great job because he's being tough and he's making it take a humanitarian stand, even though he would fucking. Wouldn't piss on these fucking poor gassed Syrian kids if they were on fire. He's like, yeah, I am a good humanitarian. And then he's going to express it by dropping more bombs.
I mean, there's some truth to the fact that like liberals, and not even very smart liberals, were like, if we keep saying President Bannon, eventually he'll get mad at Bannon. And it worked.
Yeah.
like this is a president that Jon Stewart could have taken down.
But turns out all of the ideology and incentives are on reinforcing the worst possible instinct.
Exactly.
Instead of something constructive, which is to exploit his insecurities and go, President Trump, you're too insecure to let Ivanka go barefoot in the Oval Office. You know, something that would help everyone.
But here's the problem, though, because, like, you know, Trump is, you know, it's funny, it's weird, like, it's sort of impossible not to talk about him, but as we've discussed, it almost doesn't matter who's president, because if Hillary were president right now, guess what? We'd be sending cruise missiles at Syria as well.
Yeah.
What I want to get into in your piece is, like, you describe this weird dynamic in which in both pieces, this weird feedback loop between Trump and the media as someone whose entire worldview is now informed by Fox and Friends, basically, which is a terrifying thought. However, there's this broader political dynamic going on. And I want you, this is really good where you're right here. The real non-ideological difference between Republicans and Democrats are that Democrats, by and large, are convinced that no one actually supports their agenda, and they devote a not insignificant amount of time and political capital to explaining to their own constituents why they cannot pursue goals that a majority of them support. This is like, you know, Nancy Pelosi saying why single payer is unrealistic, et cetera, et cetera. And then, let's be honest, now supporting this attack in Syria along with Chuck Schumer and the other leaders of the Democratic Party. Conservatives, especially those who came up during the Obama era, have more or less the opposite problem. They've convinced themselves that their agenda is hugely popular and that everyone supports them. And this gets into why they couldn't pass the healthcare repeal, is that there is a split between Paul Ryan, who now is a rhino or whatever, and these Freedom Caucus loons.
Yeah.
It's who think that it's actually it would be a really popular and good thing to kick 24 million people off their health insurance.
Yeah. This is the wild thing about the entire healthcare negotiation was that the Freedom Caucus guys, they saw that this bill was a disaster that everyone hated. And their response was Paul, you got to make this worse for us. you got to make it meaner, because that'll get everyone on board. And it's because they believe delusions. And Paul Ryan, there's a long history of Republicans like Paul Ryan who know that if they want to implement their agenda, which is hugely unpopular, they have to just force it through when no one's looking. And Paul Ryan spent the entire Obama era dreaming up a plan where once Republicans got unified control of government, it would be a blitzkrieg where they would pass everything right away before anyone had time to start breathing. And the like Freedom Caucus guys were like, hold on, like, let's make sure everyone gets a good long look at our priorities. Like, let's make sure everyone around the country like knows the implications of what we want to do.
I want to go on a speaking tour for my mandatory Thank the Police Act.
Excuse me, but there's nothing in the current bill that allows you to shoot Medicaid recipients.
But like, I think that sums up like why we can't have anything nice in this country, and the way like the political gravity only goes to the right and only goes to ever more like nightmarish outcomes and policies.
Well, like that argument I made was like, it's actually backed up by some political science. I know a lot of political science is sort of bullshit, but there was like a study I read years ago that stuck with me where these political scientists, they interviewed thousands of candidates for state legislatures, and every single one of them, Democrats and Republicans, believed that their constituents were more conservative than they actually were. All the Democratic candidates believed their constituents were like pretty conservative, and all the Republican candidates literally thought their districts were the most conservative district in the country. it's just drummed into both sides. So then it's like, well, no wonder this, like, that explains the behavior of every congressional Democrat. They think they're representing Louis Gohmert's district, like all of them.
How the fuck, when you consider how intuitive and popular something like single payer is, there's unambiguous, like, you've got pluralities of Republicans now saying that they would like something like that. And you have Republicans then trying to push back against that with shit like when Chaffetz said, well, you know, stop, don't buy that iPhone. Yeah. Or somebody I forgot today said, or yes, the other day said, well, you know, I think that getting insurance should be like choosing a cable provider. And it's like, people fucking hate their cable company. How do you lose?
I literally, in this apartment, there is only one cable company I can get.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because
of anti-competitive regulations, people cannot choose their cable companies. Yeah.
It's like, how do you lose an argument to people where that is their fucking defense of the status quo? Or something even worse, which is apparently what's like being considered, something like getting rid of the pre-existing condition thing is when they come back from recess.
And it's like the Democrats will, like, the only thing that they will like stand up for is like shooting missiles at Syria, getting us involved in the Syrian civil war. Like, I know, like, not all of them. Barbara Lee, I think, was very good on that.
One of the only people who voted against the original AUMF in 2001.
And I gotta say, like, as much as I hate them in general, you know, like the Libertarian Republicans, like Rand Paul and Justin Amish, are actually
among the very few who are actually. Which is, it was crazy last night to just see so many people, like Brookings Institute style people, who are like, you know, they spend a lot of time thinking about these things, and we've gone so far beyond any question of legality or constitutionality or international law that you're not even expected to pretend to come up with a justification under the AUMF or under the UN Charter. Like, you don't, like, Trump didn't even have to pretend he had a justification for this.
I bet. And he had probably a great one lined up.
Yeah, I'm sure he did. Yeah.
I pointed this out the other day. It was a Brookings person who quoted Ronan Farrow, which is always a good starting point for your agenda. But she said,
powerhouse.
You know, I don't even care that Trump is using Syria to bash Obama for political points. I just want him to do something.
Yeah.
Which goes back to the Forgetting Sarah Marshall song by Russell Brand. But I think my thought was, we forget sometimes that the Bush administration really didn't have to con the media into the Iraq war. They had to con the rest of the country by, you know, the mushroom cloud stuff. But the media, 15 years later, they're still ready for this shit.
They're just ready for it.
They're just Ronan Farrow, Brookings, obviously, you know, lib columnists. You don't need to con them into it or bamboozle them. They love it. They can't wait to stump for it again.
I think it's very funny when you look at the Robert Costa thing in my earlier piece, where he was like, the Trump people were shocked at how much the media loved it. That's like, oh wow, like, if they actually don't know, like, the media is teaching them again that about how Iraq happened, where it's like people were just ready to line up for this shit. Like, and I don't even think people everyone remembers how horrible the media environment was in 2002, 2003.
Oh, it was unbelievable. Yeah,
it
was
just, it owned, actually.
We're seeing so much of the same shit. It's like, yeah. If you're like, wait, maybe we shouldn't occupy another country, and maybe we won't make things better because we sort of
never
got
have literally ever.
Yeah, yeah,
like, but the people, you say that, you're an Assadist.
Yes.
I think we should investigate this attack, or at least not immediately bomb Syria. Assadist.
Yeah.
It's an Assadist to me. What I think is so interesting about this time versus Iraq in 2002 is the Chuds of all people, the Paul Joseph Watsons, the Cernoviches, they're actually like, no, I'm against this. And they're showing so much more backbone.
Our new Syrian war is not based.
Yeah.
I know. It's like, now it's like, damn, I wish they hadn't canceled Million Dollar Extreme.
Trump to watch that. Yeah, maybe be like, eh, maybe we shouldn't bomb Syria.
Yeah, world peace. Exactly.
Well, in the Bush administration, in the first term, like, it was the racist paleocons. It was Pat Buchanan.
Yeah.
Was one of the leading anti-war voices, because the paleocons are like, they're actually isolationists, and like, they were the only ones who were out there besides leftists who no one was allowed to repeat on TV.
Yeah.
Like, the only anti-war voices that were allowed on TV were literally racists, because
so Jeanine Garofalo did a lot of good work, God bless her. She would go on to like O'Reilly and get screamed at for 20 minutes, and then people would be like, that's all they got is these fucking dipshit actors. Like, that's the only people they would let on TV.
The only ones they would let on TV, yeah.
I mean, I feel like now with our new allies in the anti-war movement, the Gorilla Man,
Prison Planet,
Prison Planet, Jew Detector,
the Logical Atheist,
the Ethical Pedophile. I think that
the Dying Pundit,
I feel like we're at the part in Lord of the Rings where Gimli goes, "I never thought I'd die fighting alongside an elf, but it's." I never thought I would die fighting alongside triple parentheses you.
It's actually like when the Care Bears call their cousins.
The racist cousins.
Yeah, the racist cousins.
They all come together.
But like, here's what's so fucked up about this is like, they're showing like these chuds, these degenerates are showing more moral consistency. Like, they're less revolting to me now than these fucking Hillary Clinton liberal. Like, there's honestly no one more nauseating to me now than these Hillary Clinton Democrat people, especially on this Syria shit. They've gotten so unbearable and actually morally repulsive.
You know, you got to give some credit to the actually morally consistent ones, like Peter Dow, who was like, you know what? Like, Trump's right on.
My old uniform still fits. Be sure I am coming for you. Gamaliel, his body was never found.
Like, Peter Dow is now out there being like, Hillary wouldn't have done this. He's out there being like, you know, I got to give Trump credit.
Well, it's another... It's just the poison caused by having this fucking massive goddamn world-bestriding military.
Yeah.
Is that it creates this in a lot of people's minds, it creates this moral imperative to act. And that just, so many people who might otherwise have good humanitarian moral instincts are sort of seduced by, like, we have this power, we have to use it. That's why the Chuds are resistant, because they're pieces of shit.
Yeah.
They don't care about other people.
Yes.
That's the cornerstone of their fucking politics, is everyone else could die and I would be happy. People who, like, have a sense that every human life has value, they're tempted by the fact that we have all this power.
And, like,
and every fucking image they get in media about the necessity for the one true powerful person using their power for good. And then they're like, we can do that. We can finally make something work in this world and save lives. And it's just a tragedy that all of that energy gets just twisted and warped and funneled into the military-industrial fucking complex.
Well, military-industrial media complex, because another thing we're seeing now, like, if you watched any of the coverage of these cruise missile attacks last night, like, what you saw is, like, Brian Williams literally jacking off on television. But then they bring on all of these ex-generals who now, like, there's a big piece on this in the Times about how, like, all of these guys have undisclosed ties for the defense industry,
like, everything
that they consult for, and they come on TV and they just talk about it like it's a sport, like it's like they're breaking down the football game. They're like,
we got to have a very, this is a kinetic operation. What you're seeing here is, you know, like we're pocket passing offense right now, you know? And it's like, it's all the same shit. They bring on the generals to talk about it. You will never hear anyone who's anti-war on any cable news network for any reason.
And well, all in the guys like Brian Williams and like Tom Brokaw before him, like all of them wish they had been storming the beaches at Normandy, every single one of them. And they're like, they were denied that opportunity. They were denied the opportunity to fight in World War II. So every, all they, the only lesson they really ever absorbed is like, is worship the troops and respect the generals. And that means like really, really, really getting into it when the generals come on and talk about this, like talk about strategy. Yeah. And it's like, it's not just that they want to cover it like a sport. It's that they want to be like at the fucking, like, you know, risk board, pushing the little pawns around, being like, yes, general, that's what a wise strategy that we have. When in fact, like, our strategy is always incoherent. Like, our strategy is always like, if we intervene, things will happen that are good. But so I don't know. There's no incentive. There's no incentive to push back ever and just be like, have we figured out like in what way this ends in a good way for anyone? Like, there's no incentive to do that.
Yeah, because it's like, okay, we did this cruise missile attack. Obviously, Assad's still going to be in power. I mean, it's in, like, as Felix said, even if, you know, this is in no way degraded his ability to keep killing people. Trump, in, you know, not to get hacky about it, but in his way, he really did state exactly all there is to say in that stupid statement where he goes, well, obviously Assad is in charge and something should happen. That's all there is to say because he is in charge. That won't change. And then, as Matt was saying before, even the moral, the people getting war chubbies, they say something should happen. So we got to do something. And that's it. He distilled
Raytheon's up. That's all. That's the real concrete result of this, is that Raytheon's up like 2.5 points today.
But it really, I mean, it is, and there are a lot of people who fall in line behind these things because they are just told that this is, if a bad thing is happening in the world, this is the response to make it better. Like, they're not told any other thing about what could be done to make it better. They're just like, us firing missiles is going to make it better. And it's like, people who want bad things not to happen are like, I guess we should fire those missiles then.
But at the same time, I don't think there's any, like, overwhelming public demand for
we don't really
punish
want that.
Assad.
And that's
like,
the thing. Like, we were talking about how, in the face of people's lived desires, domestic policy goes further and further to the right, becomes more and more savage and cannibalistic, and the military just continues to bomb everywhere on the face of the earth that people have no connection to or desire to see bombed. And that's why this sort of epoch-breaking event of the Trump presidency is, I think, really the start of a new era, because, like, if government is that, and politics is that divorced from any kind of result, like, you press a button in the voting booth and then, like, some shit happens in a dark machine and then it just spits out war and crushing medical debt out of the other end of it, why the fuck aren't you just going to vote for the most entertaining option?
Yeah.
That's why Senator Kid Rock is in the future.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, we're in the new era where it's just like, most people have tuned out, and the people who are still in it are in it for their team and for the spectacle and the emotional release. And that means that, yeah, things like competence and ability and any of that crap, the West Wing shit that validated American institutions, is totally meaningless. And all that is going to matter is how you pop on TV.
To that end, about sort of, strategy and, like, the, you know, players on a team, I do want to get into, you know, obviously, like, Syria is in the forefront of the news right now and probably the most important thing. But the other thing that just happened today, of course, is the Senate confirmed Gorsuch for the Supreme Court, right?
Yeah. They
did the nuclear option. They got rid of the filibuster to get this guy on the Supreme Court. That was sort of like a fait accompli. We all knew this was going to happen. But, like, okay, I want to go back to, like, talking, like, again, back to the Democrats. Why didn't they pull the trigger on this when they had the chance in 2009?
Oh, my God. Because they are horrible at politics. I mean, no, they're bad at politics. What's funny is that, like, the you know, John McCain, like, tears streaming down his face as he, like, votes to do the politically expedient thing that he has always said he's against. Yeah, like, there never was a filibuster. There never was. If when you tried to use it, it disappeared, then it did not exist. There was not a filibuster. And Democrats just operated under an entirely self-imposed constraint because they're idiots.
Well, this is, like, what I was thinking about, like, this is, like, an example of when the prisoner's dilemma makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
Like, you have to fuck over the other guy before he does, especially if we're talking about congressional Republicans. And, like, this goes back to your point about how the really weird, like, skewed perception that they have of, like, the electorate and politics in this country. Like, who do they think that they're dealing with that, like, the like that, well, you know what, we better keep the filibuster around because one day we'll need it. You
know,
it's just, it's like, what do you think they're going to do to you when you try to use it?
Yeah. You can see that I just said this last night, but, like, senators who are, like, you know, just crying tears over being forced to end the filibuster, like, and destroying the norms of the Senate. And the filibuster is this completely accidental invention that's not remotely constitutional.
That is almost, as we were talking earlier, has almost always been used for, like, horrendous
for evil, reactionary purposes.
Evil things. Yeah.
Like, these are the same senators who,
Strom Thurmond has the world record for fucking filibuster.
These are the same senators who are also, like, not really caring about, like, the president ignoring their Article I responsibility to, like, agree
declare
to war.
Yeah,
exactly. They're like, oh, I can't believe we were forced to end the filibuster against our will to seat a right wing reactionary on the Supreme Court.
No one gets more mileage out of very concerned press releases like John fucking McCain.
Yeah.
Political cartoon idea.
Yeah.
John McCain is on the floor of the Senate and he's crying and holding a gun to shoot Old Yeller that says filibuster on it.
Yes.
But the dog is also chewing the Voting Rights Amendment.
Yeah.
To represent Strom Thurmond. The honorable filibuster.
Well, isn't it just because they, like, believe this shit? Doesn't it come down to that? Like Republicans at a certain level are aware that they're there to do things and to run shit. And Democrats, to a disturbing degree, think they're there to enact this fucking, like, cosplay of virtuous democratic norms,
or that, like, upholding. Or that politics is about compromise, coming to a compromise
and
solution.
That, like, there were literally people in the Senate when Trump got in talking about how they weren't going to be as obstructionist as the GOP had been, because I think it was Chris Coons said, two wrongs don't make a right.
Yeah, they literally, and they,
it's like,
they,
you fucking nerd bitch, what are you talking about?
They thought that was a message that would, like, play too. Like, they thought people at home would be like, I gotta give the Democrats credit. At least they're, like, better about respecting procedural norms than
Aaron
the Republicans.
Aaron Sorkin has done more to poison American political culture than anyone since D.W. Griffin.
Yes. This bullshit fantasy land politics that he sells, where it's like, if we can out reasonable the other side, like, we'll win in the end.
Yep.
And they're just, like, mowing us down.
And, like, look, it doesn't necessarily make for, like, effective governance, as we're seeing.
No,
but, like, it doesn't need to, because they're gonna, like, they just got their guy in the Supreme Court. They're gonna get the entire these federal appointees who are
boss hog
monsters,
the Second Circuit, baby.
Just absolute monsters are gonna, like, just, like, you know, like termites, just worm their way into, like, every federal agency. We're never gonna get rid of them for as long as we're alive. We're still gonna have this awful Supreme Court.
There was this really funny anecdote. I forget where I just read this, so apologies to whoever just said this, but, like, early in the Obama administration, they had all these judicial slots to fill, and they nominated like two pretty left-wing people and then one centrist, because they were like, well, the Republicans will block the left-wingers, but we'll get the centrist on. And the Republicans just blocked all three. They were just like, what the fuck do we care? We don't want you to win.
We just don't want you to win.
That is the central tragedy of the Obama administration from a domestic perspective.
Yeah.
Because he apparently was on record saying recently, like, well, if I had known that the Republicans weren't going to work on us at all with healthcare, I would have, like, maybe said single payer from the beginning.
Yeah.
But it's like, the fucking second the second you took office, Mitch McConnell said in his fucking turtle ass voice that our number one priority is ensuring that Obama doesn't get a second term. And if he doesn't want you to get a second term, he's not going to gift you with a fucking
legacy defining
goddamn healthcare reform.
Yeah.
They have no incentives to do that.
Yeah.
The only reason they would do that is because, well, you know, that's what politics is getting together and hashing out a compromise over a couple of bourbons, which is, that's just totally missing the incentives at play. And to do that, to be an adult, to be president, to have done all of that, and to come to that point and still think that, you have to be operating on so many levels of ideology that just obscure every actual thing in front of your face.
That's the most, that is the purest ideology, when you get in there and, as Obama did, and you're immediately like, look, yeah, it's a zero-sum game. We have to, like, sometimes there are months where I have to kill 200 people in Yemen, and most of them are children. But we have to do it, like, or else I'm not going to get anything done. This is the world. This is the real world. I have no choice. But then you turn around, you're like, I think that we have a lot more in common with each other. And I think if I have a beer with Mitch McConnell, he'll be my friend. And it's like, where's this guy when you're murdering children? Well, where is the cold pragmatist goes away when it comes to, like, you know, not building an insurance bill that's a fucking ticking time bomb and, you know, fucks over several million people, or, you know, trying not to bargain away Social Security.
Well, you know, they say politics stops at the water's edge, but I mean, really, it comes down to the fact that human life stops at the water's edge for these people. I mean, at a certain level, the only thing that makes sense is that, like, you know, your moral imagination can only do so much. And especially when you have this many things to do and this much machinery and you're in charge of it all and it's all operating at light speed, you prioritize. And even if you're not knowing it, the farther you get away from those American borders, just the less you have to really, like, weigh the consequences to people's lives, because they're not really people.
What do you look at? One of the like most, I think, tragic things about this entire era is that I honestly think that just sort of constitutionally and by his nature, Obama was the most disinclined to intervention, military intervention, president we've had since probably Carter. But yeah. It barely mattered.
Yep.
Like he tried to go to Congress and they said no. So he didn't start war in Syria. I mean, he didn't like properly sort of go in, because he was like, I should try to get Congress to sign up, sort of. But like by his nature,
well, he probably tried to do that because he knew it would fail.
Yeah, exactly.
And he didn't want, he didn't go to Congress to intervene in Libya.
He did the thing with when he walked away from enforcing the red line that, like, you basically are never supposed to do as president, which is to make a promise of force and then not carry it off, because you're a bitch.
You can promise health care or card check or anything that actually helps people and not deliver.
But if you don't deliver on a threat to violence, you're a bitch cuck for the rest of your life. And he was like, I will be a bitch cuck for the rest of my life to not go worse into Syria. And he still did all this awful shit.
No, I know, but that's what the hilarious thing. When you look at his presidency, by actual reasonable standards, we were, like, doing so much war all the time. But when you read, like, the foreign policy elite write about him, they were always flipping out about how reluctant he was to do war.
And what's crazy is he still regarded a guy like Jeffrey Goldberg as, like, the best person to to, like, you know, really get my agenda out. It's like, don't you know who this guy is?
Let's have Charles Krauthammer roll his rancid ass in here.
But do you remember, like, the Ben Rhodes profile everyone flipped out over when Ben Rhodes was like, well, you know, all these people want us to go to war all the time, and sometimes we say maybe we shouldn't. And people were like, oh my God, ignoring, like, oh, and it's like, he went, like, he did, we did plenty of killing overseas under Obama, and this was a guy who, like, didn't want to do that much of it, like, before he got into office.
And not just did Obama turn fucking South Yemen into the surface of the fucking moon. When he didn't want to do the killing himself, he was like, well, sure, you know, Saudis, our jets will at least refuel yours when you go and fucking bomb a fucking funeral on purpose, or do everything that is supposedly the reason why we need to get to be in Syria to get Assad out of there. But
which is what's so terrifying about having a foreign policy order that is now relieved to have a president who, if he sees Schindler's List on TV late at night, might authorize a drone strike on fucking Berlin. That's good because it
but
means...
to kill Oscar Schindler. He, look, he's lying. Look,
his shells, they're not working, folks. What the hell? They're paying good money for these shells.
I am, folks.
He said, the kids, I need their small hands to make the shells. How stupid are we to take that deal?
Does anyone, by the way, know who was the girl in the red dress?
Oh, my God.
Yeah, that's
how
good.
Long have you been recording? Hour and 5 minutes. Perfect. Hour and 5 minutes. Yeah, I mean, anything else we should wrap up?
I think that was good.
Okay.
That felt really fucking good.
Yeah.
I mean, except for the whole thing about how we're all fucked.
We're, all,
yeah,
we're all going to die.
All of us are fucked.
Okay, so Alex Perrine, like I said, this one felt like it was a long time coming, but I'm glad we finally got you in the
more
trap.
More than delivered. Hell yeah.
First time, long time, fan.
Yeah.
Do you have a radio show I could call into, maybe?
No, not yet. But
okay, all right. Excellent. Alex Perrine, it was a pleasure. Keep up the good work.
Yeah, thank you, man.
Thanks.
Cheers. Gorky, thanks for calling us. I guess before you go, would you ever consider popping on down to Brooklyn? Maybe arriving by some sort of dirigible or,
I might very well join you in Brooklyn, but I shall have to wait till Brooklyn is cleansed, you see.
I just a day or two advance warning before the cleansing happens is all I'm really asking for.
Yes, I see you. I know a player of Axis and Allies when I hear one. Look, Mr. Chapa, I'm rolling up my sleeves to the elbow. Look, do you see anything that scares you tattooed upon my person up to the elbow?
I think that's the head of a Roman eagle.
That's merely a chivalric herald, and it has nothing to do whatsoever with the cleansing of society of non-Christians. I could explain all of this. I could explain all of this quite easily if you would get on the underground subway in DC and just pump yourself over to the bottom of the White House.
Sir, thank you for your service. I consider you a friend.
Yeah.
Your thanks I can almost not hear above the sounds of the screams.
Who screams?
Muslims.
Well,
always a joy, always a pleasure.
Sir Gorka, you know, keep on killing it. Keep that Turk out of Vienna. Keep him at your city walls. We love everything you do, buddy.
The gate shall hold, Mr. Chapo. The gate shall hold. Why don't you hopscotch down to the White House?